Greetings, film freaks. We are the Podcorn Kernels. Join us as we discuss the hard and often indigestible truths that are at the center of the fluffy and delicious world of cinema.
What's poppin', people? Welcome to the Podcorn Kernels podcast. My name is Adam, and joining me in your earholes is Harry. Say hello, Harry.
Oh, mate, I wish you could have met her. Have you ever had a New York deli pastrami sandwich?
On today's episode, we will be talking about Nope. This is a 2022 film directed by Jordan Peele and stars Daniel Kaluuya, KK Palmer and Steven Yeun. IMDb describes the synopsis as follows. The residents of a lonely gulch in inland California bear witness to an uncanny and chilling discovery. Here is an original song to support the synopsis.
Gulch!
Yeah.
Goat!
Don't look up if you want to survive. You can't deny what is hidden in the sky. You can't look away, try as you might, from the things astray into your sight.
This episode was requested by Dylan at Real Arrogant Reviews on Instagram. Thanks for listening, Dylan. If you are a listener that would like us to cover a film you love, loathe, or love to loathe, please do get in touch. Let's start with some facts about the film. Jordan Peele cites King Kong, Jurassic Park, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Signs, and The Wizard of Oz as influences for the film. He considers these films as examples of addiction to spectacle, a major theme in the film.
Why didn't he include Jaws in that?
You see influences of Jaws?
Oh, huge. You know when the banner keeps hanging out of this alien's arse?
Yeah.
It's akin to the oxygen bottle that's in the shark's mouth in the last act of the film, isn't it?
Mm.
Because it's the thing that ends up killing it.
Yeah.
As little as it may be. That little bottle stuck in the mouth, this bunting was hanging out its arse and it was what was making it sick.
Couldn't digest it.
Yeah, and Jaws is so similar to Jaws. Jaws is all spectacle. People can't look away from looking at William Kittner get torn up.
Yeah.
And it's even got a Spielbergian sort of sound to it.
Yeah, it did.
He just didn't want to give the kudos to the Spielbergian. He didn't.
No?
No, he didn't.
Well, Jurassic Park's done by Spielberg, so is Close Encounters of the Third Kind, isn't it?
Yeah, but, I like drama. I like to cause fights.
Yeah, yeah, and you're good at it as well. Out of those films, which one would you say is the most influential?
I'd probably say King Kong.
Yeah?
Yeah, because it's a singular entity. It's one large monster.
Man versus beast, right?
Yeah, and the spectacle is that he gets locked up, that he becomes something that they can prod and poke and look at for a weekend fancy, even though it suffers daily.
Yeah, they're trying to exploit this unknown thing for money, for financial gain.
Yes, I'd say King Kong out of all of them, for me.
Yeah, see, for me, it would be Signs. For the simple pure boy fact, it's an alien. So when I read it, I was
Signs,
like, but you're right, there's so much more to it than it just being an alien threat.
Signs doesn't have like a deep social commentary, does it, about surveillance culture?
Yeah.
It doesn't have that. Signs is about a guy finding his faith.
Yeah.
Which is a very overdone plot. But so where Signs pips this film for me is that it is genuinely more scary.
Mm.
Because, again, less is more. So having the little, not little, but these aliens, you don't see the ships in Signs. You don't see their technology. All you see is these grey skin-like creatures.
Yeah, yeah.
You see an arm or a leg here and there. It builds fear quicker, doesn't it?
Mm.
With this thing, once you start seeing it, it's like a huge jellyfish carrier bag.
Yeah.
I'm like, what that?
Yeah.
What that?
That's exactly it, yeah. It does lessen when you actually see the beast itself, doesn't it?
But this film obviously speaks to more, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's with every Peele film,
yeah,
there's more to it. There's subtext. There's loads to read into.
Which is fun because it's layered. You can watch it more than once in that regard.
Yeah, definitely. Second fact, when OJ and Emerald are being retold of the 1998 incident where a chimpanzee actor of a well-loved sitcom brutally attacked and killed two of its co-stars,
Travis,
OJ says that incident is part of the reason animal trainers are forbidden to train with chimpanzees nowadays. Hmm. He is likely referencing the incident in 2009 involving another chimpanzee actor named Travis, who mauled and disfigured a friend of his owner's before being shot to death by police. So you knew this?
Have you ever heard the phone call?
No, when I saw that fact, I was shocked that something like that happened.
Yeah.
A chimp.
Yeah, there used to be a program called like When Predators Attack or something, and I remember watching that one. The owner of the chimpanzee runs into her car and phones the police, and all you hear is he's eating her. He's eating her face. Charla Nash is the woman who actually had her face eaten.
Jesus.
And I implore anyone to go and look at what a chimpanzee can do to someone, and then think about domesticating and having them as pets.
Yeah,
it is unreal. They're four times stronger than men.
Really?
Four times.
That's a madness.
And they cannibalise their own dudes. They murder and cannibalise their own kind.
They eat selves.
They even eat their own babies.
What?
Yeah, like the fastest takeaway on earth.
So you telling me the cool dudes from PG Tips?
Yeah.
Johnny Vegas' mates?
Yeah.
I love chimps.
Well, it's like teddy bears, you know, the illusion that they're cuddly, furry things, but deep down it ate Timothy Treadwell while he was still alive.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a big bear.
Yeah. So moral of the story, I think, in this whole film is don't exploit things that shouldn't be exploited. Don't fuck with wild animals.
That's that whole sequence, even though they go flashback to it a few times, I found terrifying.
Yeah, me too, man.
It's so horrible. Like, because you know it can happen. It has happened.
Yeah.
That Charla Nash woman, it happened to her. She went round there, apparently, because her the owner said, oh, he can't get him out the car. He's broke into a car or something. And she went round there and she picked up his St. Elmo doll, his favourite doll, and she dyed her hair a different colour, so he didn't recognise her, and all he saw was she had something of his.
So he went ape shit.
Oi! Yeah, man.
Fucking hell.
The photos are shocking. And then when you see, obviously, in this film, in the flashbacks through Steven Yeun's character, you see it doing the double-fisted hitting.
Yeah, see, that when I saw that, I was like, okay, I believe that to be normal chimpanzee behaviour.
Mm.
The eating of the face.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I can't believe that, because they're not carnivores, are they?
They eat meat.
Do they?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they do. They eat little monkeys. Yeah.
Well,
they
of course
they can get a bloodlust. They eat grass roots and and all of the normal vegetation that you'll get in the forest floor.
I mean,
bananas and stuff. They eat that, but they can get a bloodlust. They'll eat little monkeys.
You literally
bonobos or whatever.
You literally just told me they were cannibals. Then I acted surprised that they eat meat.
Mm.
You've already informed.
Yeah. They eat the enemy as well. Like if they're trading off territories and they kill one, they'll eat it because it's a waste of food.
You got to respect them for that.
Yeah.
They're not wasteful.
It's hard for us because we see our heritage. Well, some humans that believe in Darwinism see our heritage in apes and chimpanzees.
Evolution.
Yeah. So we're sort of like, oh.
We're only a certain percentage of DNA away from eating our own babies.
Oh, man, there's early evidence couple of hundred thousand years ago to go back that the tops of human skulls were found in caves. And the only thing we would eat before we used to cook food was the brain because it was the tastiest part of the human body. So cannibalism was in humans was a real thing, and they'd eat the tasty part of the brain in the skull, and they found all that evidence in burial sites and stuff.
Couldn't have been a vegan then.
Woof.
Final fact, Jordan Peele said he wrote the script at a time when we were a little bit worried about the future of cinema.
I feels that.
So the first thing I knew is I wanted to create a spectacle. I wanted to create something that the audience would have to come and see. Do you think he was successful in his endeavours?
It definitely feels like it was made with lots in mind. I don't think he had singular vision. I think as he was writing it, he wanted it to be huge and differentiating and taking alternate paths constantly.
Yeah.
Like the Gordy thing, you could say, didn't need to be in the whole film at all. But when you see it's foreshadowing the predator itself later in the film. So the way the ape moves around the set after it's killed, the ship moves the same.
Yeah.
It stalks from cloud to cloud, then stops and looks and observes. And you see, like, and they're both sort of animals trying to tame a wild animal.
Exactly that.
So yeah. I got the Gordy thing. At first, I thought, why do we keep going back to this?
Yeah, it's exploitation.
Then later, I saw it was like a form of foreshadowing and also, you know, like just driving the message home about caged animals and stuff.
Yeah.
It's a form of servitude, isn't it? And slavery, again, that probably goes back to the race talk.
Yeah. It's certainly filled with deeper meanings.
Yeah, definitely.
There's loads of it. And I think, like you said earlier, I've seen the film a few times now. The more you watch it, the more little subtle things you see and pick up on. And I think you're right. There is an argument to be had that he maybe tries to do too much. He tries maybe to put in too many, too much subplot, too much subtext.
Yeah.
Maybe one or two would have worked better than like four or five, because there's stuff in there about like...
Felt that way.
Like social media and obsession with like...
Phones.
Technology, you know, being interesting to others, like making money, exploiting things. Like,
why are you not getting your phone out?
Yeah.
He definitely, you can tell he wanted to like just put a firecracker up cinema's arse during COVID, because it's so colourful. The scenes towards the end, especially when they've set this assault course. I didn't really understand the science behind that. Why did an electric bike just stop?
Because
they had car batteries lifting up them inflatable...
Well, when
men things.
When Beastie McTavish is flying over stuff, it stops electricity, doesn't it? And I think when he was driving away, that's where Matey Boy was hovering in the sky. So that when he approached it, that's what wiped out his bike, because it gets rid of all electricity.
Oh, okay.
Right, I think.
Anyway. Yeah, that makes sense. That's why they're using car batteries to keep them things inflated.
Yeah.
Okay, I understand now. Yeah, to look at. I didn't recall the trailer looking... That not including all of the great parts in the film, which I like.
Yes.
I think that's kind of cool. That's not one of my likes, but it's just come to the top of my head.
Okay.
The trailer hid a lot from what you actually see in the film. Like, I don't remember the Gordy part being in the trailer. I don't remember all them inflatable...
Yeah, floaty McFloaty boys.
Yeah, but it had... It was spectacle's the right word. And he keeps driving that home about that, doesn't he? Spectacle. Yeah.
He's big on it.
Yeah.
So that was off the top of your head, like what... more thought out likes you have for me?
Well, we almost argued about this, but I just have a few light likes that I wanted to bang in, because they deserve a little shout, but I don't think they warrant a huge convo. But I'll let you decide that, actually, because that'd be interesting if any of them do spike your fancy. Cactus flavored slush puppy, Mr. Ice. What, where, how can I sup upon the teat of that ingenious beverage? It pairs perfectly with the Agua Dolce landscape.
I mean, just quickly, I would like to try this drink.
Did you see it?
I didn't.
Oh my God. So, you know, Ewan is setting up a human buffet for the carrier bag jellyfish. There's a slush puppy machine, or what the Yanks would call Mr. Ice. And you've got a cactus flavour on the left, then a watermelon, then another flavour, and then another cactus one. I thought, cactus flavoured slush pup?
I'd try that.
Aloe vera or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was a short like. I thought, goes well with that whole desert vibe. I thought, I can smell it. I can taste it.
I'd like to try that. Have you had rose water?
I've had rose harissa chicken.
Rose in drink form is delicious. So I'll try cactus, yeah.
Oh, schnorky okay, pook.
Next little light like.
Realistic digestive system. Let's not talk Latin. That giant carrier bag toilet seat UFO thing ate some people and then shat it out about 5 hours after. Disturbingly, onto the area where it feeds.
I would argue that Floaty McFloatface has got a form of IBS. Ibs.
Yeah.
And
you
I relate.
You relate.
I was like, that poor fucker. There was wheat in there.
You don't shit where you eat.
No, you don't.
What's he doing? You want to shat on the house that's been feeding him for years?
Yeah, but he can just fuck off anywhere he likes, can't he?
Sexy jellyfish. Third one, TMZ reporters scream when he goes flying off the electric bike and his yelp echoes around the hills. I rewound it 4 times.
See, I swear to you, on my mother's life, when I heard that scream, I was like, that's going to be a like.
Yeah.
Because you're a big fan of a yelp.
Oh, it's one of the best.
It's a great yelp.
Yeah, I still want to do that. The greatest screams in cinema history.
Oh, I think that deserves to be in the top 20 at least.
Little something. 20-minute episode, 10 minutes each. We just put forward our case about the greatest screams in cinema history.
Yeah.
Final little like, Walk On by Dionne Warwick is in my top 20 songs of all time, and it appears early in the film.
Great song.
Boom. Okay, heavy light. Rolling Vistas and Summer Air, baby. Hoyt van Hoytamer, the cinematographer behind Dunkirk, Interstellar, and Let the Right One In. Boom. Looks great.
Oh, he was the...
He did this one, yeah.
Oh, fair
He's worked play. With Nolan twice and did Let the Right One In 2008.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, man. Amazing. Shot in 1.431 aspect ratio, specially created for IMAX. Enabled the vast landscape, UFO imagery and horse riding scenes to show 40% more than you could usually.
That's wonderful.
Just looks amazing.
It does.
Looks amazing. And that, you think of them films. Think of Interstellar, Dunkirk, Let the Right One In, and now this, how good it looks. I mean, he's a big boy, up and coming.
Yeah.
Well, not up and coming, he's done it.
Yeah.
But just like, when I see his name now, Dutch dude, I believe.
Yeah.
I'm just like, yes.
You look forward to it because you know he's a classy cinematographer.
I straight on early on, I was just like, oh, that looks amazing. Yeah. I just wanted to be there because it's got that cowboy feel to it. But also at the same time, I'm pining for other at the moment. I want to be away from here. Yeah. I don't want to be in England, Surrey. I want to be away from current events. And I just want to be in this little desert land, riding a horse, making a fire.
Drinking aloe. No, not aloe. Cactus slush.
Aloe cactus.
Aloe cactus.
Oi.
Aloe cactus.
Oh, yeah. Man. And just looking at the stars, untouched by light pollution. I love it. Yeah. Heavy like, I love the allegory or subtext that runs throughout the film about that whole surveillance culture.
Yeah.
Everything needs to be filmed or captured on camera to be lauded or believed.
Yeah.
And it annoys me because we've talked about it a lot with that whole, you know, like the press getting in your face and stuff. It's like when people witness a car crash or a mugging, they'd sooner film it than help.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's so weird. I remember being at college and so I would have been 16 years old, 2005, 6, something like that. And I remember there'd be a brutal beating up or a fight near a train station or something, and all the hoodlums would just pull out their phones, film it and laugh.
Yeah, it's a madness, isn't it?
While some kid's crying his eyes out because he's getting his shit kicked out.
Yeah,
of him.
Yeah.
And it just made me think of that.
Yeah.
And it just wound me up. That TMZ driver in this, when he's broke his legs and he's laying on the floor going, oh, help me, but could you take a photo first?
Yeah, otherwise it didn't happen.
Kind of makes me hate myself because sometimes when I get a bit Dutch courage, even I like to be a bit of a spectacle. I like to film myself doing a song or doing a sketch or doing something funny to try and get likes and for people to say, oh, you could have been a great actor.
Hey, there's talent there though, mate. So you deserve to be seen, yeah? So don't put yourself down in front of me, all right? Because I don't have it. I will jump on that like, though, if you'll allow it.
Yeah.
And right. I'd say my favourite thing about the film is the deeper meanings. Like all three of Peele's pictures, there is plenty of subtext to explore. And I think Nope speaks to humanity's obsession with spectacle and our inability to look away from things that are awful or troubling. So basically what you said.
Mm.
And for me, the film is an analogy of exploitation and focuses on how we, as a species, will do anything we can to make money out of things that are different and the things that pique our curiosity. The don't look in its eyes message is a metaphor suggesting that we should be more considerate consumers. And maybe I am reaching a little, but that's just how I read it. So like we've both touched on, it's a Peele film, so there's going to be lots to pick apart. There's going to be lots of deeper meanings.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just an alien flick where there's an otherworldly beastly being a menace for the sake of being a menace. There's more to it than that.
Yeah.
And I, for one, I enjoy that. I think it's good. And the more you watch it, the more you take from it. And I'm a big fan of that sort of cinema.
I loved that whole don't look, because the look thing, it sort of speaks to that whole, you're being greedy for your own self-satisfaction or sort of lurid curiosities. So if you look, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Because it's almost like a religious Ten Commandment. It's almost like you're serving your own self-gratification for the weird, for something suffering, but you, at your expense because you paid for a ticket to see it.
Well, it's exactly that, isn't it? I think it's built into our DNA. You can't look away from things that are horrific.
Yeah.
And then when
you seek them out, which is worse.
Exactly.
TMZ driver seeks it out.
Exactly. And when we live in a society where you've got a recording device in your pocket, everybody does, anything you see, before it would be word of mouth, it's like, I saw this mad thing, you're just going to have to believe me. Now, 30, 40 people have got the same footage. Like you see at a stadium, an amazing gig. People aren't watching the gig. They're getting it on their phone so they can show people later.
And the noise is awful. I've never understood it. I did it. I used to do it a few times. So when I thought, wow, I'm seeing Fleetwood Mac, the full lineup. This should not be happening. This is a band from the 70s. How is this possible?
Yeah.
I'm filming it on my phone. I realise I'm not watching it. An hour, 2 hours goes by and I thought, I'm not watching it. I'm filming it on my phone. And then you listen back on the phone.
It's crap.
It is the biggest piece of shit you've ever seen. All you can see is Stevie Nicks' arm just go up once and it looks like she's about to keel over. And then I was like,
shame.
I've just wasted 2 hours watching one of the best bands ever. So.
Yeah. I don't think that's your fault. I think that's just society being shit again.
Yeah.
Got any more likes or shall I carry on?
Oh, actually, I covered the foreshadowing with the animal how it's like sort of pacing around the set was similar to how that carrier bag jellyfish thing sort of did the same around Agua Dulce, just sort of hid between clouds looking. And then if something made a noise, just like the monkey, something makes a noise, he's alert, he goes for it. Because the monkey, the great ape, the chimpanzee, when the bloom pops, that's when it kicks off on set.
Yeah, because it startles him.
Yeah, so and, I think similar with this sexy jellyfish thing.
Yeah.
Horse neighs, it's on it.
Yeah.
Which I think was really cool, yeah. That's it, man.
They're decent likes. I think I share all of them, even your little minor ones I liked as well, so thanks for that.
Light likes my Harry.
Oh, yeah, very nice. The second thing I liked about it is obviously the man himself, Jordan Peele. I just like his vision and style, man. As I said before, I'm not a horror fan, but I do enjoy his unique brand of thought-provoking storytelling. And I love that sort of deep undercurrent of humour that runs in all of his films.
Mm.
I don't know about you, but I thought Nope had great suspense building, offers a new spin on aliens, and is an enjoyable 2 hours from a man who is, he's always willing to explore his own vision.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for me, out of these three films, Get Out is head and shoulders above the other two.
Mm.
But there's still parts of this film, Nope, and Us, that I thought were very good, very interesting.
Yeah.
And the sort of political subtext and the deeper meanings are stuff that I like to explore. I like to see, without someone telling me what they are, I like to see what I pick up from it. And I think he's very good at doing that. And I do believe the more films he does, the more experience he gains, I do think he'll get back onto Get Out's level and maybe even better. So I'm excited.
I'd love to own his box set when he's on about his eighth. How cool it would be to just see like the variation in movies. Yeah, I agree in a sense it's not as good as Get Out. I think the main reason for that though is that no character in this is allowed or has enough time, or their character's just not written in a way where they could give us a great performance.
Yeah.
There's no real character in it that's just like, wow, that's... that's an amazing performance.
Yeah.
Get Out has that. Get Out has the real risk of almost, you know, that sort of undercurrent of racism, slavery, and so the performance reflects that.
Yeah.
In this, well, it's an action horror movie, really. It sort of speaks back to some very old sort of fun horror films that used to happen where, a bunch of kids make The Last Stand. It's got that feel to it.
And you could argue in this film, the Jezebel... jellyfish sauntering in the sky could be the main character.
Sauntering.
Yeah. Gets real dutty with its vibey sort of flowing movements.
Yeah. And it's always at humans, yeah?
What do you mean?
Well, because Keith David took a coin in the head, so I assume it had already eaten humans before.
Yeah, and I think it munches on horses as well, because that's what Stephen Yeun's character does. He offers it horses to munch on as a way to exploit it. So it's like a deal. It's like, I feed you horse, you make me money because people can see you in your
glory. So he learned nothing from his experience of Gordy the chimp.
Well, no, he learned that people are fascinated by it. So it sells because people are fascinated by his story, what he went through with Gordy. And he's like, you know what? That was horrific. I watched him maul a little girl instead of like being more sensitive to the matter and staying away from that shit. I'm going to try and be the one that exploits it because people are fascinated by
it. It's
shit.
So dirt.
Yeah. Final thing I liked about it is Michael Wincott's voice.
Oh, he's excellent.
I know it might be an odd thing to flag as a favourite in a film that I mostly enjoyed, but his vocal quality, man, is immense.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a huge role in the film and he's pretty generic as a cinematographer that is in love with himself. But his voice is one I want to hear a lot more of. Gritty, gruff, and it reminds me a little of Leonard Cohen. Just every time he spoke, man, I was like, you know what? I'm going to start smoking 40 a day so I can sound like that. It's just so deep.
Remember Prince of Thieves? Why a spoon, cousin?
Yeah.
Because it's dull, it'll hurt more.
I just like that vocal quality to his voice, man. I just think it's so cool.
He's wicked.
Like he could be dressed up in a bin liner and speak and I'd be like, you sound so cool, man. Like you're so cool.
When I was watching it, I pointed at the screen, kind of like DiCaprio in Once Upon a Time. I was like...
Because
I was like, he's Scatman.
Yeah.
And partner went, what do you mean? I went, he's Scatman.
Yeah, he there
I was like,
to
he's
die.
Going to spend the whole film getting to the end to die.
Yeah, yeah. That's why he there.
Called it.
Yeah.
I'd be cool if that footage that he did take going up into the mouth, the impossible shot they called
it. Yeah.
During the golden hour, which we spoke about recently.
Yes.
It's that optimum time. This is a big homage to cinema, this film.
Yeah. It's and like, I like that.
Like Licorice Pizza in a way. It's just a homage to film.
Yes.
More than anything. Yeah, I'd be cool to see that shot.
Mm.
The one that so someone finds it. He definitely laid enough groundwork to set a sequel.
I'd like to see that shot too. And I would love to see it like, you know, films now do that thing where it's like a post-trailer. A post-credit like scene or something.
Oh yeah,
like right at the end or something. You just saw that footage going in the mouth and coming out and stuff. Just as a little Easter egg for people that stuck around. I'd quite like to see.
Yeah,
that,
it'd be cool.
Yeah. So, what didn't you like about Nope?
Nope. The word and title of the film is used in the film more than once.
That's another thing, as well as the yelp off the bike. I was like, he's not going to like it's the fact that they end. Say nope.
I've said it before and I'll say it again, but now I'm going to listen because I am of no consequence. But yeah, he should have named it Little Green Men like he said he was going to, because then he could have screwed his audience over. So many people would have gone to watch it for the spectacle of Little Green Men, and he got the last laugh. It weren't a green man. Sexy jellyfish carrier bag.
Yeah.
Jezebel, what did you call her?
Yeah, Jezebel jellyfish.
Sauntering through the Dolce.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, schnook.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like it. Yeah. I think he might do it in all his films. Do they say us in us?
I imagine it's such a common word, us.
Mm.
Like, I'm sure they would have said it, but probably not like said us and looked at the camera and gone, eh?
Yeah, wasn't once, like, it was more than once. And it wasn't said, like, do you want a burger? No, it was said for effect to nod to the film.
See, I kind of liked it because in so many of these sorts of films, like, they're in a dark house and they keep looking further and going in. My reaction would be, nope, I'm out.
Mm.
So I did kind of like that, because I would see anything and be like, nope.
Well, lots of comedians have spoke about that, haven't they? They said, yeah, it's always the dumbass white people that end up going, let's split up and check this house out. And yeah, they always say, like, it would be the black guy that hands back and goes, nope.
Yeah, I'm out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a great, I mean, yeah, it is comical, but I just don't name the film nope.
Yeah.
Use the word nope in its best for that effect, exactly that yeah effect. But maybe name it something different.
Yeah.
What's nope spelt backwards?
Epon.
That would have been shit. That sounds like a like an Apple device. Yeah. No, not Epon. Okay. He did want to name it Little Green Men, and I thought that would have been a great red herring or ruse with his audience.
Mm.
People like, oh, it's called Little Green Men. Look at this thing, UFOs, you know, and they never get to see the Little Green Men.
I'd called it Intruders of the Gulch.
You should never be naming films. Intruders of the Gulch.
Just came up, man.
That sounds
just
like a Boogie Nights sequel.
Mm.
Intruders of the Gulch.
What,
John C. Reilly Klingoned up, just heading headfirst into the biggest gulch ever.
Mm. What else didn't you like about the film?
Keke Palmer's character. Oh, it was gimmicky. Almost scary movie-esque in a role as Emerald.
It was too extrovert.
It was too much.
Just chill.
Not likeable, not believable character. I didn't believe that she'd grown up on a ranch.
No.
Like, she was just... She was like a wasp in a room for me.
Yeah, irritating.
Like, I was trying to just watch the film, and I just found her, like, she was like a wasp.
Yeah.
Even her entrance into the film, it was this very high energy...
Yeah.
Sort of, I don't know what you call it, almost like musical theatre performance when yeah she first came into the scene.
Yeah.
Like, he's nervous around the horse. He doesn't want to be there. His dad did all of this work with Hayward Horses at the in Hollywood. And then he's waiting for her, and she turns up, and it's all this, like, it's like this almost Greatest Showman performance.
Yeah, she's sort of almost a salesperson.
Yeah.
I think maybe she was there to offer contrast to Daniel Kaluuya's character, OJ, because he's quite reserved. Isn't
very.
He's quite sensible, quiet, thoughtful, considerate, all these things, and she's the polar opposite. Mm. So I'd maybe that's why. And listen, I don't think K.K. Palmer's a bad actor.
I think it's the character.
I tend to agree. As someone who's, I'd say, leaned towards the sort of introverted side of the spectrum, someone that's that extrovert, I'm always a bit like, oh, can you tone it down a bit? It's a bit too much for my sensitive feelings.
There was no character in this that I adored. There wasn't like one that I was just like, oh, mega.
Not even Jezebel Jellyfish?
No. Or Pereira. Is it Pereira? Blake Pereira?
Yeah. Played Brandon Pereira.
Played the Fry electrical guy.
Yeah.
There was no one like... It was just an ensemble for me, but to see Daniel Kaluuya in Get Out give such an excellent performance and show so many skills and layers to himself, to seeing him sort of, not grumpy, but unenthusiastic.
Yeah.
In almost every part of it.
I think, I tend to agree, I didn't think about it until you said it earlier, but it is more of an ensemble piece where it is an action yeah sci-fi. So there's not, you're right, there's not an awful lot of character development. You're sort of just watching these people deal with this otherworldly threat and adapt and you know, survive.
Well, I think he achieved what he wanted then, didn't he? He wanted a summer spectacle to try and help cinema get back on its feet.
I'd say he's largely successful in his endeavours, yeah. Mm-hmm. Any more dislikes, or is that you done?
I wish the film was about Goldie and the character Ricky Park moving into adulthood with the trauma he carries from the awful mauling and killing he witnessed on the set of a TV programme.
Yeah.
It's the better plot and could still cover all the subject matters within note. The first for spectacle, twisted morals, hunger for fame through any means possible. It's the better story, and the PTSD segments could be terrifying dreams, as well as thinking of like apes like approaching your bed at night and just going, call it the danger of trying to dress a chimp in Dad's Sunday best.
That's a good name.
Yeah.
I like that name. I would have gone Gorgie in the Gulch.
Oh, that is Megs.
I have to have Gulch.
What was the first one?
Well,
first use of the Gulch. So Gordy in the Gulch could be the first. What was the, you said something else just a minute ago? Gulch.
Oh,
base.
I can't even remember.
John C. Reilly in the Gulch.
Yeah.
Oh no, that was my input.
I can't even remember what it was.
Last dislike, as UFO scare movies go, it's, for me, it's Far Behind Signs.
Yeah.
In terms of what it did for me scare wise, even Fire in the Sky, which isn't, it had the budget of a true movie, but the actual alien scenes and the speaking of abduction was terrifying in that film. But that wasn't its full intention. It wasn't just to be a scary UFO movie. Like we spared, it had lots of subtext, lots of allegory.
Yeah.
So it's a moot point, or a nay notion, if you will.
Oh, hello, nay notion.
Nay notion.
Big fan of that.
I don't think anyone's ever done it.
Patent it.
Moot point's huge, but nay motion. Nay notion.
Nay notion. And in a film, Nope, where it's horse heavy.
Oh.
Yeah, nay notion.
Oh, dude.
Big, big fan. So I'll go on to my negatives now.
Yeah.
After your nay notion.
Yeah.
I like that. And the big dislike for me is the alien design and reveal.
Oh.
Nope had me fully gripped by an unknown space oddity causing mischief. But when the look of the floating nasty was revealed, it looked like two things. Number one, when it was hovering over its prey, it looked like an eye from a Simpsons character. Then, when it revealed its full body, it looked like an odd origami octopus with a fabulous Victorian dress slash cape.
Yeah, I don't get that.
Yeah, the look of it took me out of the film a little bit, and the fact it was defeated by an inflatable cowboy was a little disappointing. Like,
how thick is this alien? It's survived so long and hunted the way it has, but it keeps getting defeated by balloons.
But I think that I did like that about it, because it wasn't necessarily intelligent otherworld being. It was that, like Daniel Kaluuya's character OJ says, it's an animal, it's territorial. So it's not necessarily there. It's not really advanced in terms of intelligence and
I think it's to do with
technology.
Global warming and pollution. Look, it keeps getting killed by unnecessary plastics. Celebratory plastics.
There's another thing. Add it to the list of subtexts.
Plastic balloons.
Yeah, I reckon it could
be. Bunting, celebrating things that aren't worthy of celebration.
And how humanity are fucking up animals and the wildlife. Yeah, that, add that to the list.
Oi.
Well done. That's
I didn't know
one.
I was writing one, but I'll continue writing that list.
Yeah, yeah, that's good, man. Another thing I didn't like about it, and it's something that runs a lot in these sort of films, and it's just the level of acceptance. Like, I'm always bothered at how characters in a film like Nope are so quick to adapt to the batshit crazy circumstances they are facing. Like, I lose my shit if plans are changed by 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But in this film and films like this, the dad is killed by an alien shitting out shrapnel and the remaining characters are pretty quick to accept it and just adapt to it. Not enough freak out time.
Yeah.
I would lose my head for years. I'd be in a psychiatric ward going, look what happened. This is absolutely mental.
And it wasn't a loan coin. There was a key in the horse's ass as well.
Yeah.
Amongst odes of other detritus and debris everywhere.
Yeah.
It winds me up as well. I hate that shit. I hate it when people adapt to something that's supposed to be so alien.
Yeah.
So quickly.
Yeah, yeah. And it always grates on me. Like, from the time they realise, oh, there's something in that cloud, to their time of going, oh, we're going to exploit it to make money. That yes, that would happen. But then them realising its weaknesses and then deciding to go and fight it was like, I know this is a film that's 2 hours, so you can't have it an 8-hour film of them freaking out, because that would be madness.
Yeah, of course.
But I always with these sorts of films, they just sort of like, oh God, this terrible thing that we could never imagine happening is happening.
How do we stop it?
And it's like, roll up your sleeves up, get the shotgun, turn the oven on.
Insert signs. You don't need 2 hours of someone losing their shit because they've seen an alien or a ghost. All you need is Joaquin Phoenix in a cupboard witnessing CCTV footage of an alien walk across a kid's birthday party, and his reaction is enough for you to realise this is a shocking change in his normal life. A boom.
Yeah, because I saw that recently, and that little glimpse, that little like glimpse of green alien little man looking at the camera. I saw it, and it shit me up as well. I joined Joaquin on that one. I was like, oh God, no.
His reaction's exceptional.
Like
man. Jumps off his chair, holds his mouth, but he has to look.
Yeah, yeah. Again, like, no, spectacle.
That's the thing, man.
Yeah.
No.
And my final thing I didn't like about it is horses.
You don't like horses?
I just don't like them, mate. They are huge dog cars that have eyes too far apart.
Dog cars?
Yeah, their eyes.
Dog cars.
Dog cars. Their eyes are too far apart, and I was bit by one when I was younger, and I've never trusted them ever since.
Dude, their eyes aren't far apart. They're on the other sides of their head. They can't go further apart.
That troubles me. I just don't like them, mate.
Less so they can protect themselves in the wild.
I don't need to know. I don't care for their reasoning. One bit me once, and ever since I've had beef with it.
I prefer horses to humans. That's a for showzals. If I could do a poody cast with a horse, it would be excellent.
Well, it wouldn't.
Do you know what I'd call it?
Nay negatives.
No, I'd call it nation.
Mm. Not bad, but a little bit hurt that you'd rather do a podcast with a horse than me. Anyway, I got some questions.
Oh.
I've got some questions if you're interested.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you believe aliens or other beings exist in outer space?
No.
At all?
No.
Okay. I thought there'd be more conversation on that.
I think with how the universe is constantly expanding, it expands quicker than our technology can catch up with trying to explore the universe. And so the Schrodinger cat thing, we can never find out if they exist because we don't have the means to prove it. So it will never be fact or science. It will be theory. And we can't see anything in our observable universe.
But then the sheer scale of it.
Oh, yeah. You can throw in probabilities and theories. Like, so if you threw in, was it the Drake equation?
I don't know what Drake is other than
Drake
that.
Drake equation's where
Canadian rapper.
They looked at where we sit in the galaxy and what made our planet habitable for alien life.
Okay.
So they look at that, and then they look at what planets aren't inhabitable. They look at what suns that, how close a sun needs to be to a planet. How many planets are there in our universe? How many stars are there? You can do some maths and then turn around and say there's potentially 200,000 Earths in our universe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the potential for life, and then you've got to look at, well, what made life? And then you break it down and like, so alien could just be that there's a Roman Empire on a planet that we'll never reach, millions of miles away, millions of light years away.
See, I just have a far more simple
answer.
Yeah, just yes.
Yeah.
Because it's just so big, innit? It's just bare big, this universe and shit. Other universes, it's just like, imagine the arrogance to think that we're it. We're the pinnacle of creation.
That's not arrogance. That should be taken as fear. That should be taken as,
oh God,
we will never be here again. This is our last, this is our only planet we will ever be able to live on. Once this planet goes, we're gone. We might be an archive for some alien that sets down on Earth in 2080 when there's a statue of Sam Smith taking over the world instead of a Statue of Liberty. It's just Sam Smith there with his hand up in the air, you know, rolling out of his bikini.
Their bikini.
Accurate.
Yeah. Second question. In Nope, there is a menace monkey called Gordy that I found myself more than a little troubled by.
Oh.
Is there something or someone on screen that has bothered you but maybe shouldn't have?
What, in the film?
Any film.
Something. Well, Gordy should bother you. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
That's not an abnormal thing to be scared by.
No, but I was like actually like checking my bedroom for a Gordy.
Oh, facehuggers in Aliens.
But that one's...
They're huge spiders.
Oh, yeah.
They're hand spiders.
Yeah, with a tail.
Yeah, and they can hide. They're mischievous and they're huge and they're shell-like. It's like a crab hand thing.
But I'd say that is, you're meant to be scared. And I think you're right. You're probably meant to be scared by Gordy, but I think I was a bit too much frightened by Gordy.
Well, it's terrifying though, because he has that scene where he Jonathan Demme's towards the camera.
Mm.
That was like, oh, I don't like that.
Yeah.
But then he does the Caesar hand offering.
Yeah, because Stephen Yen's character, Ricky, when he was a kid, was always obviously sweet to Gordy. So he had no beef with him. So he was just like, oh, I learnt this little fist bump with you. You're my dude.
Yeah.
And then, the one that I thought of was sad. Black Phillip. Like, I know when you sort of learn more about Black Phillip from The Witch, you learn that he's probably an evil entity and stuff like that. But even before you start to think that he's dodgy, that goat bothered me.
Mm-hmm.
And that goat still bothers me.
Something about goats, man. Like you said, rectangular eyes.
Yeah.
It's offsetting from the minute you see it.
Yeah. Final question. Would you rather be abducted by aliens or kidnapped by humans?
Abducted by aliens?
Yeah, 100%.
In a heartbeat. At least it's interesting, new experience.
Yeah, and you don't know
new
what...
New experience. I've been kidnapped by...
No one would believe you.
No.
But the thing is, we know humans. We know what they're about.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't get what they want from the kidnapping, you're done for. The aliens, exactly. you might be their favorite new toy. You might be a prized possession. You might be like a pet that they treat so well, and your life with the alien abductees is much better than our existence down here.
Probe me until all I can say is yes.
Yes. Probe me till I no longer fight it. What would you rate Nope out of 10?
7.
Ooh, okay.
It was 6 for a good part of the film, but then I found myself enjoying it a bit more as it unfolded.
Yeah.
As I got past the grating of Kekiki, is it Kekiki's
character? KK, I believe.
Yeah, Emerald Hayward. Yeah. And, you know, other... The Pereira guy, Brandon Pereira, yeah, Angel Torres, the character's Angel Torres.
Yeah.
Dude, if I went to PC World and paid for some installation... And that dude was in my house every day for like a week. I'd be locked in the toilet phoning the police. I have been infiltrated. My house has been... There's a nut job here.
Yeah. I'd be like, there's a slutty jellyfish thing in the sky that's bothering me. But this man that's an employee at your establishment has moved into my house.
Yeah.
I am more concerned by this.
He's the alien. He's the UFO. He's infiltrated the defences.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm surprised, actually, because I thought you'd go lower than me, but I've gone lower than you, but only by a little bit, and I'd give it a 6.5.
Oh, I almost did that.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I was flirting between a 6.5 and a 7, but those things that did bother me, you know, the horses,
You can't dislike horses.
No, I know, I'm joking. But the reveal of the actual beast itself, I was a bit like, Simpson Eye, Origami. No, I didn't really.
I would have preferred Aliens.
Yeah, didn't. So for that reason, it was slightly less. So that gives Nope a total score of 13.5 out of 20. If you like your alien films to be original, odd, and octopus shaped, or if you have ever wanted to see a maniac monkey massacre a miner, then Nope could be a film for you. Consider watching this one if you enjoyed Get Out, Us, and Signs.
That was horrible.
Should we play a game?
Yeah.
The game in question is What the Plot, where the rules are simple and the results quite the opposite. Harry will conceive an original idea from his big and beautiful brain and give birth to a plot. It is then down to me to nurture this thought by providing a film title, genre, cast, and anything else I can think of to raise this brainchild into a fully functioning film concept. Over to you, Harry.
Roar. We can't do the lion one, can we? It's too hard. It's that Goldwyn Mayer.
What, the lion?
The lion at the start.
That was
That's
awful.
It. No, that was quite good. No, that's TriStar. Oh, I'm getting them confused.
Okay.
I just thought I'd give you a little moment while you prepared your pens and stuff.
Oh, that's nice, man. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Right. Old grandmother begins to flirt with the idea of killing her whole family at an upcoming Sunday dinner. By poisoning the turkey with death cap mushroom gravy. Could be undiagnosed dementia, schizophrenia, or something more possession-based. But it starts with her biscuit tin, which started talking to her, which she has called Sir Crunch.
Right, well, okay.
So, yeah, so a biscuit tin. So it could be dementia, it could be, but it also could have that, I don't know, possession sort of thing going on.
Sorry, what's that? What's the tin called?
Sir Crunch.
Sir Crunch,
it's a biscuit tin, she just started talking to her. This is not funny.
I mean, it sounds kind of funny.
He's telling her to kill the pigs. The pigs that eat your food and pollute your toilet with their ungrateful feces. Feed me your friend. Give me your love.
Sorry.
You have spawned evil onto this world, Martha White. Now you must take them back. Take them back to your womb and keep them there. So she poisons her children, husband, grandchildren, sister, and even the dog. But she forgot about Linda. Linda was her daughter and is her daughter-in-law, and Linda is running late. Oi! It almost sounded like a trailer in itself. How about that?
So everyone dies except Linda.
Well, she's snuffed her whole family.
Well, and just forgot Linda wasn't there.
Linda was running late.
Right.
And then she realises what it's like. There's grandchildren, children, a brother, a sister, and a dog or something there. And they're all there, and she's like in like, you know, an animal state, like, she's killed her whole family.
Yeah.
Sir Crunch is like, yeah. And then she realises Linda's going to get there. It's going to be a war. Them two are going to fight. She's going to get there. She's going to hide the bodies or try to hide the bodies. Or Linda's going to walk in and see the carnage. And then the last act, this will be the last act. Then she will be trying to kill, they'll be trying to kill each other. It'd be a fight. It'd be kind of like the end of Shining.
Okay.
The chase and survive and then becomes a fight.
So it's your basic evil biscuit tin film.
Yeah.
Really.
Which, you know.
Your classic.
I know it's been done a lot.
Yeah.
With the biscuit tins talking. Yeah. But I think that it's time for a revamp, you know. I mean, look at Nolan goes remakes Batman.
When was the last time we had a decent biscuit murder film?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So this old grandmother, she's by all extensive purposes just a lovely family woman normally.
No,
normally she's lovely.
Well, she has been. She grew a huge family and stuff, but
she started. So there has the family started to see that she's taken a bit of turn, like, and they sort of start to question it, or is it complete surprise that they go round there?
I'd say they are concerned, and her way to prove to them that she's fine is, well, I'm going to make us a huge roast turkey Sunday meal. All come, let's all be together.
Okay,
and they're all like, oh, maybe she's okay.
Yeah. And it's the and what does them in is this menacing mushroom.
Death cap. Amanita, yeah.
So the name of, okay.
It was in the news recently that a woman used it in a gravy and fed it to her kids for a beef Wellington and her husband. Not knowing, apparently. I don't trust her. Australia as well. That's an Australian true story.
Yeah.
But it happens a lot. People eat the wrong mushrooms and die from it. But yeah, particularly that is the most deadliest mushroom on earth.
Yeah.
Next to Fallen Angel.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
See, I could quite easily turn that into a bit of a comedy.
Like a house that Jack built.
I
don't want to be a comedy.
No, it's not.
No, you choose.
I'm saying no, I see it as a straight up horror, because that idea of...
There's kids dying.
Maybe it is like an analogy of dementia. Maybe she thinks the biscuit tin's telling her to go murder family, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's psychosis. Or maybe the film makes you sort of question, is it the biscuit tin? Or is she just gone a bit mad?
Well, she feels the biscuit tin like she feels her family.
Okay.
She has to fill empty spaces with things.
So maybe one of the kids go to get a biscuit before dinner and she goes absolutely mental. And that can be the first sign that this isn't Nana Martha White anymore. This is, something's happening.
Oh, you got it. You got the name.
So,
nice.
Yeah. So I'd say straight up horror. And directing the film, I wouldn't go for your sort of someone that you associate with horror. I'd go with Ben Wheatley, largely because I've seen a lot of films of his recently.
Field in England.
Yep. Kill List, Free Fire, Rebecca. And he's a really interesting British director that seems to be able to turn his hand to anything.
You said he's different every time.
Yeah. And that's what I love most about him, I think. I don't watch one of his films and be like, oh, that's very similar to his other film. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not all hits. Some of them are misses, I've got to be honest, but I do applaud and appreciate the fact that he tries something different. Mm-hmm. And so he's a British director, and in the role as Martha White, I'd have Judi Dench, because I think she's a great actor, and I couldn't think of anyone that would be...
British heavyweight.
Yeah, British heavyweight.
And passing into that sort of dementia zone.
Exactly, yeah. And I just think she'd be... I'd love to see her in this sort of, like, role where she's going a bit mad, where she's starting to get a little bit menacing with mushrooms, when she's getting a little bit risky with her biscuits.
Frisky with her biscuit tin.
Exactly, yeah. And as
the voice of Sir Crunch.
Oh, Sir Crunch has a voice?
Yeah, he talks to her.
Oh.
But we only see it from her perspective.
Okay.
She's almost like, what do they call it? Unreliable narrator.
Okay.
So the kids would never hear him talk.
Oh, well, whose voice would I see?
Michael Wincott.
Yep.
Yeah, boom!
Yeah.
Because you said you love his voice so much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That is perfect. And the fact that her biscuit tin is inexplainably American.
Her biscuit tin?
Yeah.
Is inexplainably American.
Yeah. So, and playing, I guess the only other...
I wouldn't say he has an accent. I wouldn't say he is American or anything. Like,
I think
his voice
American,
is the same in
he?
Prince of Thieves. Why a spoon, cousin? He's in The Crow. Yeah, but he's not like... Oh, hi, how are you doing?
I like that as the biscuit tin. What's his name, the old biscuit tin?
Sir Crunch.
Sir Crunch, played by Michael Wincott. Martha White, played by Judi Dench.
And Linda. That's her daughter-in-law.
So someone that's got a bit about her, a bit of savvy. Yeah. Emma Thompson. I just like her.
Well, yeah, I suppose you could make it. Yeah, she's not far off the age of Judi Dench, though.
Oh, are you sure, mate?
I'm quite sure.
There's got to be a good 20 years diff in between that. I think this. Yeah. We'll have to check, but that's what I'm going with.
Okay, I saw a younger fighting an older, but I'm happy with Thompson. I could watch her.
Yeah?
Yeah, man. Just watched her in Matilda. She was excellent.
Yeah, she is.
Trunchbull.
She is excellent. So it'd be a Ben Wheatley horror film with Judi Dench as Martha White, Emma Thompson as... Auntie Linda, and Michael Wincott as Sir Crunch.
No.
And I'd call the film dinner, def caps, and digestives.
Oh my God.
What have they done for you lately?
They're my family, and I love them.
Yeah, but you're here on your own. You're a pensioner. They come to visit when you offer to feed them.
I'm their mother. It is my job to feed them.
You sit in this house on your own. You're lonely. You're miserable. You're an old woman, Martha. It's their job to look after you.
Oh, yeah, well, you're a biscuit tin. Your job is to hold digestives.
At least I keep you company. And why am I the enemy? I can see those mushrooms you picked. You know what they can do. You know what you have to do.
Oh, my God, what have you done?
Do it.
You killed them all.
No.
Linda,
calm down, darling.
What's wrong with you?
Just listen to me. It wasn't me, sweetheart.
What? Who did it?
Sir Crunch.
Who the fuck's Sir Crunch?
He made me do it.
Who the fuck is Sir Crunch?